Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church. We got a mandate. Get it on and welcome to the best 15 minutes or so in the universe. It's Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus and parts unknown, but we'll know in a second. Where are you, Mark?
Downtown L.A. I kind of hop, skip, jumped, and did a high hurdle over the unhoused on the way into the building.
Yeah, or maybe formerly housed. I don't know what new euphemism we've whipped up for this crisis, but maybe some changes on the way.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. It was just something that I thought you would enjoy. Spectrum TV came out because they wanted to do a story on how restaurants survived COVID. And I started talking about it, and they go, no. We want to hear what you think about the homeless situation. I say, well, if you want to hear that, you got to listen to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, because nobody in the mainstream media wants to hear it, number one. And number two, if you've noticed, I sent this to Gary yesterday. I think you and I talked about the LA Times and their kind of agenda. And I was saying, wait till they get a hold of Caruso, because they're going to start in on Caruso. And not one, but two articles already hit pieces on Caruso this week, because God forbid that somebody come in and actually try to reverse course on this cesspool that is down here.
Yeah.
Right. This one's my favorite. Useless tax disclosure. He did exactly what he said he was going to do in the debate. Absolutely exactly what he said he was going to do, and they do is clickbait it.
The title is Useless Tax Disclosure, says Caruso thinks voters are idiots. It's such an interesting thing, because anyone who agitates for anything different than the status quo, and the status quo is full Thelma and Louise. The status quo is we're just accelerating toward the edge of the Grand Canyon and we're going off a cliff. And God forbid any human being attempt to try to correct that course without agitating the LA Times for attacking. They will get attacked if someone actually just deems or even attempts to change anything in Los Angeles. I don't get that. That's why that's your default position as a news outlet. Somebody's got an idea.
And by the way, how much legitimacy do you have as a news outlet when for three generations, back to when the Chandlers owned the paper, you owned and occupied a building smack dab in downtown LA? Then when you sell the paper, what do? You flee to El Segundo. You're right. You know, it's easy to throw brickbrack from El Segundo, but since when does the Azeri Times want to talk about what's going on in downtown L.A. when they fled?
Well, so other subjects, the mask mandate was lifted federally, yeah. I guess. Thank God. Somebody in Florida. I spent the early part of my career making fun of Florida. Now I'm making travel plans. But
and, you know, it's one of the things I love about Twitter is the breakdown of people who on Twitter, because all the videos that were going kind of live and viral were of flight attendants or the captains on the airplanes announcing the mask mandate had been just struck down. And in one case, the guy's actually holding a bag to take the damn mask so you can throw it in there. And then people were like, what about the immunocompromised? What about the children? Blah, blah, blah. And then the next wave is, well, she's a 33-year-old ABA, not well qualified, piece of shit Trump appointee, which was, okay, you can disagree with the opinion. That's your absolute right. That's the thing. But by the way, why do you embrace kind of logical fallacy number one of an ad hominem attack by saying, first of all, quoting your age, second of all, Trump appointee, third of all, rated unqualified?
Well, let's not forget the same crew was cheering on every judge who shot down a Trump administration decree just a few months ago or several, 2 years ago. They loved every judge that shut down one of his policies. So do you love judges intervening or don't you love judges intervening? And the answer is, well, we'll see who the administration is and what the judge is saying. Look, we don't need a judge for this. My fucking son could have done this. It's not a vector of transmission. There's nothing going on airplanes. And as I was screaming on my podcast earlier today, well, all the people that have their panties in a bunch over this, they're the same people that had their panties in a bunch over Tampa out celebrating the Super Bowl win, Sturgis biker rally. Oh, the church opening up on the corner, the restaurant remaining open.
Outdoor dining.
Okay. Now, please, all you hysterical ladies that lunch, can you get back to us in 3 weeks? Because in 3 weeks, there'll be millions and millions of miles logged on airplanes with people that are maskless. Get back to us in 3 weeks. Show us all your data of all the new strains and forms and infections and how hospitalization is going through the roof. Or conversely, shut the fuck up. You come back. CNN, you're not allowed to go to Daytona Beach and talk about super spreader events. And if you do, fine. We'll come back in 3 weeks and you show us the data. But they never come back. That's the whole thing. They move on to the next thing.
Because there is no data. I mean, that's what's so shocking. Every time I always go default to Judge Chalfant here in Los Angeles Superior Court. He gave not one, not two, but three chances to the Department of Public Health to come up with anything. You know, three strikes, you're out. And, you know, God forbid that anybody holds their feet to the fire. And this idea that somehow you're going to default or that you have to kind of embrace the public health authorities when we know that the public health authorities were clueless in for the most part. And just take a look at the data. The data is there. You can read the studies. You can do it yourself. It doesn't require an advanced degree in biology to understand it.
Well, we just got lectured a few months ago by the guy who was the health official for the stadium where the Rams played the Super Bowl. He had admonished us about popcorn and how to consume it properly and safely with the mask up. And he's on to us if we have a bag of popcorn and it lasts more than the third quarter. All right, now show us all the data, because all I saw was footage of nobody wearing a mask in that entire goddamn stadium. Good. Now show us the data on the spike in LA County hospitals after the Super Bowl. And again, if you got nothing and you never have anything, because you never come back, there's never a follow up. It's just, here's how dangerous ivermectin is. Okay, good. Show us all the people with tags on their toes because they ingested ivermectin, and then we can talk. But you never follow it up. You never come back. You move right on to the next hysterical talking point. And there's a very sort of ominous part of this whole thing, which is she dropped the mask mandate. Anyone who flies, it's a constant hectoring. It's an impossibility to say to people, hey, 250 people on an airplane, you must wear your mask at all times, but here are the rules. We will be doing a beverage service. We'll be doing a snack service. We'll give you a hummus box at some point. Then you can take the mask down, but in between bites. If you think about that from an enforcement standpoint, you know what I mean? When you ask people to enforce things, you go, look, you stand at the front door of Perkins Palace in 1982, and anyone without a red wristband doesn't get to go backstage. Well, that's very enforceable. And there's millions of versions of that. You may not bring a buck knife through security to get into LAX. But what if the rule was you can wear the red wristband, you can go backstage, and you can take the wristband off, but only when you're eating, but then you have to put it back on? Who the fuck could enforce this rule? If you really just break it down to a kind of smallest components of it, it's literally impossible. There's 250 people on the plane. You just gave everyone Fiesta Mix and a Fresca. How is it that you're going to police this? It's literally impossible. Not to mention the part where there's no science behind pulling the mask down and drinking your Fresca and pulling it back up. How could you even begin to enforce this rule?
Well, we showed the popcorn guy wagging his finger. That was late January, I believe. I think it was, or maybe the first week of February.
Yeah, early February. Yeah.
Yeah. We are now, but for those of you who don't have a calendar, we are all of February, all of March, more than halfway of April. And by the way, last time I looked, the daily rates, which I watch here in LA County, there is no correlation you can draw. Even though we had tens of thousands of people, not only at the stadium, you have to remember, I was just talking to a hotel owner down the street here in downtown. Every hotel in downtown LA sold out. Every bar did landmine business. So you had an incredible three-day super spreader events, right? And guess what happened?
Nothing, or it went down. Yeah. Nothing ever happens. That's the whole thing. The insidious part of this is from the White House, Jen Psaki was disappointed. The administration is they have deep disappointment that Americans are clawing back some of their freedoms. That's essentially what they're disappointed in.
Let me give you a legal analysis as well. The Department of Justice could take this decision immediately and go up to, I believe it's the 11th Circuit. Mind you, and I heard also people who are upset, oh my God, she eliminated oral arguments, she ruled on the papers. By the way, you obviously have never practiced in federal court if you're making that statement, because I can't tell you the number of oral arguments you've gotten post-COVID versus a judge issuing an order before the oral argument that says, I'm going to take it under submission and rule, there's no need for an oral argument, is probably 100-1. I mean, so please stop with this, you know, there's an agenda. Judges do it on every end of the spectrum. And you're going to find that the Department of Justice, I'm going to predict, is only going to perfunctorily do something. And why is that? Because they know that it's political theater, and they were going to eliminate it anyway, and there was no good reason for not having eliminated it already. And they know that the calculation coming up to the November election is, we're not going to be the idiots who took this on appeal and showed that we're just completely going to double down, triple down, or quadruple down on no data and no science.
What other stories have you been looking at?
My favorite is what I call the legal Rorschach test today. And the legal Rorschach test is the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Mm-hmm. Johnny took the stand today. And I have come to the conclusion, at least anecdotally right now, Adam, that there is a great gender divide about the testimony that Johnny is giving so far. Gary, do you want to play a little snippet?
Today is the first opportunity that I've been able to speak about this case in full for the first time.
Mr. Depp, how do you feel about the intimate details of your life being aired in this process?
As a father, raising kids, you know, when they were very, very little, it was important to me, very important to me, to try to shield my children as much as possible from looking at their father or their mom, for that matter, as novelties. I didn't want my children to experience hordes of paparazzis. So I was always a very private person. So for me to come up here and stand before you, or sit before you all, and spill the truth is quite exposing.
Gary, can we have Can we get Adam's reaction so far to this testimony? But well, mind you, just I want to set the stage. He's the plaintiff.
Right.
He brought this lawsuit.
He brought the lawsuit. Now, if you're dealing with an empty bag, I don't know if Amber Heard's an empty bag or not, but if you're going to go $50 million against someone who doesn't have $50 million, then isn't it going to end up here if you keep pursuing it?
By the way, not only is it going to end up here, but the great divide here amongst the genders, most guys that I've talked to are like, what the fuck? And most women are, oh, he's emoting.
Uh-huh.
I know that, yeah. And I guess the genders in between would have variations or nuances, but the I can't to cross-examine him. I just get up and say, by the way, you're the plaintiff in this case. Do you know what a plaintiff is? Do you realize that this case wouldn't be here unless you filed it? And by the way, are you aware of the fact that nobody would have remembered a op-ed that Amber wrote in 2018 where she said she was a domestic violence survivor absent you bringing this lawsuit?
Well, I did see a piece of news about the case, and it made me think of you yesterday, which is, you know, he claims she threw a vodka bottle at him. He cut his finger. But then his, I think, therapist said when he called the hospital, he said he cut it on a kitchen knife. And that was a kind of aha moment. But I think if you were his attorney, you would say many people call the emergency. You know, when you get a bowling pin stuck in your ass, you don't say that you were fucking yourself with a bowling pin. You go, I was setting pins and I slipped. You know what I mean?
Million to one shot, Doc.
That's right.
It's usually a turkey baster.
Right. But the point is you explain it was Thanksgiving. You were getting the stuff out. The floor was freshly waxed, yada blah, et cetera. So I would argue if I was defending himself, yeah, this was a domestic violence situation. He knew who he was. He didn't want to be outed and saying my crazy wife, you know, threw a vodka bottle. So I just said I cut my finger with a knife in deference to her and TMZ.
And by the way, when you're weighing which is worse, is an op-ed that says that your former girlfriend or significant other was a victim of domestic abuse. Okay, so that's one thing. Keep that in your head. Or is it worse that there's a dispute over whether you cut your finger off or your ex-cohabitant threw a vodka bottle at you for some reason that you then cut your finger with. And wouldn't you? I tend to think if I'm going to have to choose the lesser of two evils, I choose the fact that she's a domestic violence survivor.
Well, also, if she does the kind of vagary of domestic violence survivor without naming names, she spent time with Elon Musk, right? I know his name has been woven into this, but if the op-ed was written after her time with Elon Musk, then doesn't that throw his domestic abuse hat into the ring as well? Because if you say, I'm a survivor of domestic abuse, then everybody you've cohabited with or had a long-time relationship with is potentially in that pool of potential abusers, right?
And you are right. That does fit the timeline. They broke up in 2018.
So Elon would have made it under that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I, by the way, that's what I don't understand. And you know, Gary was pointing out something where the lawyers are being lionized and this or that. This is the kind of case that, to my mind, does more harm than good to the client.
Well, not only that, but it's all hearsay until it becomes memorialized in a court transcript, right? I mean, so you can do a lot of he said, she said, or whatever it is. But once people take an oath and the stenographer fires up their ivory ticklers, then it's memorialized, right? It's just it's of the record now. That's what it is. It's into the record. It's for all to see.
Right. And by the way, if she had, don't get me wrong, if she had said it was him and I was lucky to get out of this this relationship and You know, he had issues, and, you know, this was a cycle of him repeating this domestic violence. And then I get it. You want to vindicate yourself and you want to get some kind of, but not when somebody's got to connect the dots in an era where nobody, where the average retention is 90 days. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, it is a great John Stossel would say, give me a break. That was his, that I think that was his catchphrase, the great John Stossel. Right. All right, Mark, you got plugs?
Yeah, I do. If you're in the Grand Central Terminal, we're back. Prova is kicking butt. We're down in Palm Springs. Gigi's at the V Hotel. Stop by there or the V Hotel. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente in the Pierside restaurant there. And if you're downtown, Engine Company, come do the homeless high hurdles and come visit Engine or 10E.
And I'd just like to give a notice for our listeners to look out for the big show this week on Wednesday. Adam's going racing this weekend, so we're going to get it out for you guys on Wednesday evening.
Oh, yeah. Mark, you may have to fire up Big Boy and head down to that, down to that track. Get ready for my road trip. May 6th and 7th, I'll be in Indianapolis, Indiana at Helium Comedy Club. And you go to amcarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.